Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
What if the golf ball you're playing isn't the number one ball for you? Meet the all-new TP5 and TP5X from TaylorMade. Whether you prefer the softest five-layer tour ball in the TP5 or the fastest, that's now a half a club longer in TP5X, you'll be playing a golf ball that performs like it was built just for you. Available in white, yellow, and picks, you can personalize it with my symbol. No matter which you choose, every TP5, TP5X is designed to help your game. Head to TaylorMadeGolf.com today to find the number one ball for you.
Aloha, mahalo, happy Friday. It's Kate hosting the show today, and I am joined by Captain Cons. Our guy Chaps is out on vacation to Hawaii with his family. And before I go any further, Cons, what happened last time Chaps is out and you were at the helm?
Much better circumstances today on this great summer Friday, because the last time Chaps was out and it was just me, he was having a heart attack.
Oh, no.
So considerably better circumstances that he's out on the island of Oahu enjoying time with his family this time.
Yes, it looks like he's having the best time, except for it's not a heart attack, but it does look pretty bad. His feet have been terribly sunburned, I saw on a Twitter post.
Yeah.
He forgot to screen them.
That's the one part, the top of your foot. I think that's probably my most forgetted, that's not a word.
That's fine.
Area that I forget the most.
Yeah. Talk and list it to me. It's forgetted. Yeah. But it. He posted a picture where the top of his foot is like nuclear neon orange red, mm-hmm. and it's so swollen. People were like, "Do you have bones in your feet? Like,
yeah,
it looks like your
looks
feet
like
are just
of
made of like jelly."
Yeah.
Did you ever hear? This was a rumor when I was in, and I don't know if it's true or not. And maybe you'll know. I heard that you could actually get charged by underneath the UCMJ mm-hmm. for not wearing sunscreen.
Yes,
so if you
can.
No way.
Yes.
If you get sunburned badly enough mm-hmm. because you're considered government property, and if you let yourself get sunburned badly enough that you have to miss training, you can get in trouble for
it. Yes, you can get in trouble. Now, the trouble is not going to be that severe, but you can get in trouble with your chain of command. Because
Holy
it shows
shit.
A lack of judgment, a lack of care for yourself. It's the same as if, think of it this way, if you got hammered at the bar and didn't show up for work and you missed work, it's no different than if you got sunburned and couldn't do anything.
Even worse, you get hammered, fall asleep in the sun, miss work.
Double
you're sunburned
whammy.
And you've missed work.
And you're hungover.
Boy, would I be red in the face. Oh! Hey, let's get into those rounds. Today, we're keeping it short since what would we call him? The chief... What's a good
know.
Rank? I feel like he'd be like the... Chief Warrant Officer of a show. He's mysterious.
I don't know that he'd want to be a Chief Warrant Officer. I think he values his enlisted
True.
Side.
All right, we'll stick with Staff Sergeant.
Yeah.
The top Staff NCO is out. So I will get into the rounds. Round one. Former White House Chief of Staff and Republican Party Chairman Reince Priebus? How do you say it?
One of those works.
Okay. Former White House Chief of Staff and Republican Party Chairman, I'm just going to stick with Reince Priebus, now holds the title boot in the U.S. Navy. We'll tell you why. Round two, John Stewart dog-walked Congress this week on behalf of ailing 9/11 first responders, and we'll share some of the speech that brought me to tears and has been making huge headlines. Round number three, the gang interviews Wisconsinite and U.S. Marine Representative Mike Gallagher. He's also the fastest man in Congress. Interesting little factoid there. Round four, finally... For the final round, not great. There's a second lieutenant making headlines for being, what's a nice way to say this? A giant racist piece of shit online. Not great. Somebody's ass is about to get rebuked. Again, Reince Priebus. What a name.
President Trump's former chief of staff.
Former chief of staff. And the most interesting thing to me, 47 years old, this guy is going in as an ensign in the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know. They have all this pomp and circumstance for a guy who's almost 50 mm-hmm. joining us. And what's an ensign?
Ensign is the Navy's equivalent of a second lieutenant.
So a second lieutenant.
Yeah.
So basically bottom of the totem pole mm-hmm. for the officer world mm-hmm. at age 50.
Yeah, not a good look. His commissioning came on Monday following, and he needed a lengthy process in which actually former Defense Secretary Jim Mattis recommended him and a board of officers selected him as a reserve officer. So he had to go through an entire process just to have this happen. In a statement submitted to the Navy, Priebus wrote that he had proudly watched his sister serve as a Navy doctor and remembered his father teaching at Naval Station Great Lakes in Illinois when he was growing up. So I guess he just felt the need at 47 years of age to serve.
The tiniest little part of me. Mm-hmm. So he resigned in, what, 2017?
Something like that.
Didn't last really very call. Long no. as the White House chief, is whatever. And now he's getting all this great press, and everybody, when you join the military, sucks your dick. Everybody's mm-hmm. like, good for you. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Oh, thank you for serving.
Do you think, for somebody who's been a lifelong politician, do you think this is a little bit of a... You join the Navy Reserves as an officer, you get a little good press, it looks good on you.
Definitely.
Do you, like, I believe he admires his sister who served and mm-hmm. admires all these other people, but I feel like there's definitely a little element of like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think, you know, especially it's tough as a fresh lieutenant or an ensign in this case. By the way, I never liked how the Navy had to do their own rank structure altogether.
Yeah, get it together. Really, you guys are really on metric weird. System. I'm over here on...
But anyway, when you walk in day one as a fresh lieutenant, you're already behind the eight ball with your enlisted guys. Young soldiers, NCOs, they're going to show you the proper amount of respect as your rank would call for. But in their opinion of you is always going to be jaded by the fact that you're an officer, right or wrong. You right. walk in and you're just like, oh, he's an officer.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, evident by the fact, like, even you guys on this show, you still look at me a little crooked.
You can't see it, but I'm giving him the side eye right now. Giving him the old stinkeroon.
No, but so you have to, I think there's like, I thought of three real points that I wanted to make here about this. You have to think as a young troop, they could be kind of shallow, right? So they see a 47-year-old and they're probably thinking, what is this guy going to do at 47 years old? Because this isn't going to be some Disney movie where the old guy comes in and just knocks it out of the park and is amazing as a 47-year-old ensign. I just don't see that happening. And number two, I mean, young troops are always not the most insightful group. They'll hear... This is a publicity stunt, much like you just mentioned.
Yeah.
And they'll never get that out of their head. They'll just always see him as a publicity stunt. And then finally, troops can be very cruel. Young
boot.
Troops.
Reince Priebus is a boot ass boot. Boot.
They will come up with digs that are much more ruthless than that.
Yeah.
So I guess my point to this is to say that I don't see how he can actually go out into the fleet to an actual unit.
Well, he's reserves. Like, I think they're going to find... Here's what's going to happen. They're going to find his reserve duty will probably be at the Pentagon or something doing some sort of paperworky mm-hmm. thing or whatever. And mm-hmm. that's it. It's not like Reince Priebus is going to be in a submarine like, close the fucking hatch. Like, it's not like... That's not
he's not going to be like Denzel on the submarine.
Yeah, no. He's not going to be like in a giant suit like diffusing bombs at the bottom of the sea.
Yeah, but so for that regard, it's just like... I would like to think our military is above stunts like this. Right.
So I don't know. I 47 though. It made me think. Did you ever serve with anybody who was like way older than what their rank?
Well, like? I had an E7. We affectionately called him Grandpa Jerry.
Yeah.
And I remember like when we first met.
Did he have his own rum?
When he and I first met in Iraq, I had just transferred into that troop, and in the beginning, he and I kind of butted heads because we were both kind of like strong-willed, and he's obviously. He'd been in since forever. And I remember one time we got in an argument. He's like, I'll remember this forever. He said to me, you were cleaning shit out of your diaper in kindergarten when I was jumping into Panama, sir.
Oh,
so why don't you sit down and shut the fuck up? That didn't go over well with our commander and our first sergeant. And they didn't appreciate that profanity. But then I think that kind of opened the door for he and I to have an actual conversation. We're like, all right, I see you. And then we ended up being really good friends, and I respected the hell out of him. Yeah. I learned from him. He learned from me. But that's to say that you can do things as you get older, mm-hmm. but it doesn't necessarily one-for-one transfer that you're going to be just better because you're older.
And it's tough, too, because there's no, regardless of your age, there's no fraternization. So, like, I joined a little bit later. Mm-hmm. I turned 22 when I was in boot camp.
That must have been, I guess, I don't know if we've ever talked about that. Yeah. That must have been a little weird because most people in boot camp, 18.
Yeah, 18 years old. And so then when I got to the fleet, everyone who was my age and could go to the bars mm-hmm. in my unit were corporals and sergeants and staff sergeants.
So you couldn't hang out with
them. So I couldn't hang out with them, but I also didn't want to hang out with a bunch of 18-year-olds at the barracks on a Friday night.
There's
so it was
a big
tough
jump
finding.
Between 18 and 22 in terms
huge,
of your maturity and what you
jump.
Find fun and what you want to do.
Right. So there's, and I'm sure there's, I know in boot camp there was a woman who was almost, she was late 20s. and going through MCT, and she would be like, oh shit, here we go, like before the hikes, like crickety old bones.
Your
already
knees are starting to crack.
Like, just so I'm sure anybody listening out there who served, there's like, I feel like every unit has that like unicorn that's like the 30-year-old PFC, and you're like, what's your deal, buddy?
But, no, you think that, but at the same time, did you find that it helped you being a little older going through boot camp?
Yeah, definitely. To me, it was like more a little bit, once you figure out the mind game, it's fine. Right. And you kind of take on like a mom. I know at the barracks, once I hit the fleet, and I was the only woman. I was also a little older than the guys that I was equal rank to. And they'd be like, mom, mom, my uniform. And I'm like, oh my God, damn it.
These kids.
So yeah, these goddamn kids. I was the one they all called if they got in trouble out in town. I was the one that like, So you definitely have like a little bit more maturity there. But so, hey, old Rince down in the submarine saving the troops.
No, it sounds like he's gonna have some sort of HR gig, some S1 gig, so I'm sure he won't have too much adverse effect. And I guess, you know, hey, let me be the first to say to Ensign Priebus, thank you for your service.
TYFYS, good for you. All right, on to round two. Round two, kicking it off with a little bit of good news, but that good news is only because of the momentous efforts of people who should never have had to fight for it in the first place. The House Judiciary Committee unanimously passed a bill which would permanently reauthorize the 9/11 Victim Compensation Fund, and they did this just yesterday, one day after comedian Jon Stewart gave impassioned testimony in support of the bill that went viral. The bill will now go to the floor for a full vote in the House of Representatives, where it's likely to pass. I would not want to be the douchebag who votes no on making sure that people who were first responders, who are facing a whole litany of different kinds of cancers right now and lung issues and all sorts of things. And what had happened was, time and time again in the past, this fund for the victims, the 9/11 Victim Compensation Fund, oh, it's about to run out. Oh, it's not sustainable. Oh, it's this. That should never, ever have been a question. It should have been endless from the start to take care of these people. And Jon Stewart made a great point in his speech. The one thing that they really don't have is time. A lot of these people who are suffering from these illnesses, the last thing they should be doing is sitting through all these judiciary hearings, all this stuff, and fighting for compensation and to make sure that they and their fellow first responders are taken care of in the aftermath of these attacks. And I just want to play really quick. I mean, it's a little bit of a speech, but if you listen to one thing today, make it Zero Blog 30, but also listen to this testimony by Jon Stewart. It made me cry. Full disclosure, grab your tissues.
You could just, I mean, you don't need to see him. His facial expressions when you watch the video are very moving, but you could just hear it in his voice how passionate he is. Number one, it's such a shame that it came to this, that it required someone to go lobby Congress and say, hey, wake up.
Yeah.
What are you doing? These people should not have to fight to get this fund refilled and have their medical needs given the proper attention and given their proper due.
Yeah.
So that's number one. So I really, you know, there's so many things that go on in politics so often that things of this nature, and now that, gosh, we are 18 years removed from 9/11, as much as a catastrophic event as that was, I think it's almost to the point now where it's not at the forefront of people's minds. Certainly it's something that we don't forget, but it's not something that is pervasive in everyone's minds every day.
And I think that makes it easier because before, when they passed the James Zadroga 9/11 Health and Compensation Act in 2010, they actually faced a lot of opposition from, it was Republicans who balked at the $7 billion price tag. But the thing is, this is one of those things that you have to take care of these
people.
You
absolutely have
to.
So. And $7 million is such a drop in the bucket when you
consider. Oh, no.
Billion. Sorry. Yeah. All right. Yeah. 7 billion. A little bigger than 7 million. Okay. That's a little more understandable. But also, just kudos to Jon Stewart. Obviously, you know, he was here. He saw what happened on 9/11 and the aftermath of that. And it's not like he just came out this week and decided to be an advocate for these first responders and all the folks that work down on Ground Zero. He's been doing this from day one. Many, many hours of his life he's put into this.
And
I just wanted to say, it's really refreshing to see someone who has that platform, not just blowing a bunch of hot air.
Yeah. Right?
So often you see people of note or celebrities that want to take up a cause and they say, oh, this, that, and the other, and then that's it. He has actually done the work and shown that he cares about this cause.
Oh, yeah. Jon Stewart walks the talk. That he's, everything he says, he does something good. And I think, too, it's not just the 9/11 first responders. He's always been such a huge proponent for veterans. I was part of his veteran immersion program at The Daily Show, his final mm-hmm. season. Mm-hmm. And I think it's one of the big reasons I'm sitting here today doing radio and video and podcasting and writing, was because I got a chance to go over to the show every week and sit in the writer's room, talk to the cameramen. Even the lady who ran the teleprompter was like, pick my brain, I'll tell you what I do. Like, everybody there was so kind. He would walk in with pizzas and talk to you like you were the only person in the room and make you feel, and that really, for the first time ever, was like, maybe I can do something like this with my life. And he had that, it was called the Veterans Immersion Program, but they had each semester veterans coming through, and it really made a huge difference in the lives of a ton of veterans. On top of that, he was huge at the Bob Woodruff Foundation. He's raised millions and millions and millions of dollars for veteran causes, all that kind of thing. He's a great animal advocate. He has like a farm sanctuary for abused farm animals that he takes care of. Just like a good, good-hearted guy.
So he's just a genuine person.
And he's quiet about it.
Right. And yeah, that's why I didn't know of all these things. Because he is quiet about it. He's not out there like I'm saying all these other people, hey, look at what I'm doing.
Right.
He's doing it because he believes in these causes.
And also, worth noting, he is very outspoken against the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. But that doesn't stop him from supporting the troops.
Right.
And there's a lot of people who are very for those wars who talk about supporting the troops who don't do shit.
Right.
He, again, just walks the talk. So shout out to him. I think he's a huge reason. He brought a big spotlight on it. I mean, and who knows how they would have voted.
I got to imagine he was the reason. Right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, they get, the Congress obviously gets lobbied all the time. But this is just one of those situations, one of those cases where it's mind-boggling that this even had to come to this, right?
Yeah.
This should be one of those no-brainers, like, oh, 9/11 first responders? Yeah, let's make sure they're taken care of in perpetuity until the end of time.
And this fund is going to provide necessary financial support for thousands who suffered serious medical issues, including a huge spate of cancer diagnoses since the 2001 attacks. So shout out to Jon Stewart.
Thank you.
On to the next round. I know when I first got out of the military, one of the worst parts was filling out the resume, going to a million different interviews, never hearing back from anybody. It was a huge pain in the ass. People over at ZipRecruiter are trying to make that much easier for you. What if you had your own personal recruiter to help you find a better job? Now ZipRecruiter's technology can do that for you. Just download ZipRecruiter job search app, let it know what kind of jobs you're interested in, and its technology starts doing all the work. The ZipRecruiter app finds jobs and that you will like and puts your profile in front of employers who may be looking for somebody just like you. If an employer likes your profile, ZipRecruiter lets you know, so if you're interested in the job, you can apply. It's kind of like a hot dating app for a job you really want. You get to know if they're into you or not. I like that. You're not stuck wondering, waiting. Not that anybody ever keeps me wondering, waiting. I'm a hot commodity.
Yeah.
But, you know. But it's no wonder that ZipRecruiter is the number one rated job search app. And right now, all the listeners out there, especially if you're looking for a job, you should download that free ZipRecruiter job search app today and let the power of technology work for you. Don't wait. The sooner you download the free ZipRecruiter job search app, the sooner you can find a better job. Round three, we have our interview with Representative Mike Gallagher. Chaps joins us in on this one. This is one of the ones that we got when we were down on that trip to Washington, D.C. And it was really neat. It was great talking to him. Wisconsin fella. But he's not too cheesy. You know what I mean? All right, let's jump in. We are joined right now by Congressman Mike Gallagher from Wisconsin, Marine captain, 7 years, 2 tours to Iraq, commander of intel teams. Just give us your whole life story.
Yeah, just
as fast as you can.
Simple question to start it out.
But simple question.
30 seconds.
We're sitting here in your office, and this is my first time to D.C. in a long time. And we come in, and you're like, I have to have my sheet right here. I might have to run out for a vote. It's on the TV. It's all very exciting to me. But I want to know, we're always interested to know, especially how military veterans wind up here.
Well, if you can believe it, this office is actually an upgrade from my office that I had in the last Congress when I was a freshman.
Yeah.
And on the on every, so you'll see these members of Congress wearing these big obnoxious pins.
Yeah, we noticed those.
So
we,
that, I like, need helps a pin. You
I need get one.
Through, yeah, well, I, you, if you have $3 million and run for Congress, you can get one too.
I don't have that.
But on the back of it, in addition to getting you through security, it has your seniority. And so I went from 405th in seniority in the last Congress to a whopping 310th now.
Whoa,
so,
big jump! Good
moving
for you.
Up in the world and got a slightly bigger office.
So you're like the Congress equivalent of, let's say, like a senior corporal.
Yeah, exactly. Not even that. Not even that. But a lot of, yeah. So a lot of people would have to die before I ascend to the presidency, yeah. Essentially, the designated survivor. So I went to, I went to college, had no idea what I want to do with my life. I do not come from a military family. My entire family is physicians in Northeast Wisconsin. They're all baby doctors, OBs. And mm-hmm. then we also have a pizza business, Gallagher's Pizza.
Oh,
in
wow.
Northeast Wisconsin. So,
oh, we might need to get Prez to go out bite. There and do a little pizza review.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. Have the Barstool travel budget pay for a little trip to Green Bay. So I went to college, no idea what I wanted to do. And was studying abroad after my sophomore year, working at a think tank, and got assigned to this project. This is 2004, so we invaded Iraq the year prior. Mm-hmm. I got assigned to this project studying terrorist targeting methods. And so for the first time in my life, I started to think, okay, why are we in the Middle East? You know, 9/11 had happened when I was in high school, but it still seemed like a sort of distant thing. I didn't sort of think I had a role to play in all this. And I just became fascinated by the region. And so I came back, I changed my major, I started studying Arabic in the Middle East. And the more I went down that rabbit hole, the more I started to think, okay, what does one do with these skills? And I started to think about, okay, maybe I could join the military and use them. So went to officer candidate school the next summer, survived, joined the Marine Corps when I graduated, and ended up becoming an 0204 CI Humint officer. And so was really lucky, just kind of hit the fleet at the right time where right out of MOS school, deployed to Iraq as an OIC for a human intelligence exploitation team, and then did two back-to-back deployments. I was deployed with a unit that wasn't my home unit. My home unit was deploying in relief of us, and so I volunteered to stay there and just kind of felt like, you know, I'm here, I'm learning what's going on. I don't have any personal commitments, and so did two deployments, 2007, 2008. And it was awesome. I mean, we were in Western Iraq on the Syrian border, a town called Al-Qaim, which is a very fascinating place to be. Our first day in country, we had about 10 Al-Qaeda in Iraq operatives dressed in stolen Iraqi army uniforms come across the border and slaughter about 50 people in the local village. And that, you know, chasing that network down was kind of what we did for the next 7 months. And so was just really lucky. Came back, did a tour here in D.C. floating around the intelligence community.
Different than the tour in Anbar.
Yes, a little bit different, actually. Yeah.
It was probably just as hot in the summer, though.
More dangerous in certain ways.
Different types of bullets to dodge.
You know, it's funny. Like, I think when I joined, in my mind, I thought, I'll do 3 years, and then I'll get out, go to business school, and make money. I was back, when I got back from my second deployment, I remember I was in Pendleton, and I was just unpacking boxes and looking forward to just enjoying my terminal leave. Mm. And I got a call from an Army colonel at the time. And that Army colonel was H.R. McMaster.
Oh, wow. Maybe you've heard of him.
Yeah. I didn't
former
know he
former ZBT guest. He's been on the show.
Has he been? Yeah. Oh, awesome. I did not know he was like a famous person. But he, when Petraeus was head of CENTCOM.
Oh, right. Because you worked for Petraeus.
Yeah, via McMaster.
Right.
So McMaster pulled me onto this project that was the CENTCOM assessment team. And that, he convinced me to stick around a little bit more. And so I did 4 more years, floated around the intel community, did grad school, and then 2 years on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee as a Middle East guy when I got out, and then went back to Wisconsin to work for Governor Walker when he ran for president, and that brought me back to Wisconsin, yada, yada, yada. I ran for Congress, and here I am.
They probably didn't want you to leave because, I mean, people who speak Arabic are not necessarily a dime a dozen, I think.
Yeah, so I think the military, and I'd be interested to hear your guys' experience, but has a huge problem with retention. And, I mean, in some ways, a lot of myself and a lot of my most talented colleagues were willing to stay in the Marine Corps if the Marine Corps would just meet them halfway. But as you know, it's such a square peg, round hole situation that it's totally self-defeating.
We have some ideas.
Okay, well, how do we fix it?
All right, so one, we actually talked about this. So we had a podcast where we talked about the sexual assault that was the rape list that came out on the USS Florida. That's been going around the news. And we think that so many people who aren't deserving of promotions get promoted simply for the fact that they avoid conflict instead of taking on the right conflict.
Interesting.
So, for instance, if you have a base that is struggling with DUI or alcohol-related incidents, the app that looks bad on a brigadier general because so many people, instead of him combating that and going after him, be like, this is a problem on my base. I'm admitting it's a problem on the base, but we're going to get it fixed. They relieve him from command for loss of command influence. And that should be the opposite of the way it works.
Interesting, interesting. Intuitively, that makes a ton of sense to me. Or doesn't make sense, as the case may be. But listen, I think the other thing that's interesting is, particularly as we try to grow kind of non-traditional talent in the military, right? Particularly cyber talent, right? Mm-hmm. So the commandant, for example, has been talking about, okay, we're going to create a separate career track and allow people with purple hair to sort of...
We actually have that in our notes.
Oh, is that right?
To ask you about purple hair.
Yeah.
So I actually kind of want to ask you about this because I was a little confused about something about you.
Oh.
So
I don't have purple hair.
They just had the annual charity race where everybody... runs a 5K to see who wins.
Yeah.
For the third year in a row, you are the fastest man in Congress.
Yes, which is a bit like being the best player on the Bears. It doesn't mean that much.
It's a little rough.
I represent the Packers in Congress.
Yeah. But still, near perfect PFT score, 3 miles in...
That's cruising.
Yeah.
20 minutes? What? Or a little, 18-something?
18-something.
No, so, you know. Tell us.
So, well, I will. Let's go behind the wizard's curtain here. So, one, as you Marines know, I mean, 3 miles, like what we do, right?
Right.
So,
that's our
even
thing.
A short, sort of stocky guy like me can run 3 miles pretty fast.
But still, I'm looking, and I'm like, fastest guy in Congress, athlete, whatever. But also on the, hold on, I have to look at it because I've never heard of it. Co-chair of the Cyberspace Solarium. So which is it? Are you an athlete or a nerd?
I like to think of myself...
What's your... Riddle me this.
I like to think of myself as a warrior nerd.
Okay, I like that.
I like that concept.
So when Wild Bill Donovan was recruiting people to work in the OSS during World War II, he had this great line. He said, I'm looking for PhDs who can win a bar fight. And I've always thought that sort of encapsulates what you want. You want the nerdiness, but you also want to be able to win a bar fight. Now, I've lost a variety of bar fights in my life. I've never won one, but I'm trying to get to at least half of that. But... the other thing I have to admit is that the first year I won, I actually cheated because Tom Cotton had won for 4 years prior to that, and I just drafted off of him for 98% of the race. And when I saw
is that
the
cheating
line,
or is that just smart strategy?
Good strategy.
Yeah, but Tom's good strategy.
Not the thickest of fellows. That's a difficult draft. So again, using
that's
the
right,
brain.
That's
yeah,
right. That's right. So he didn't show up this year. So I don't know what's going on. So
maybe
it was a little bit of a hollow
scared?
Victory. But
think he's scared.
I'm saying right now on this podcast that Tom Cotton was scared.
Do you want to fight him in rough and rowdy? We have an amateur boxing.
This year he wasn't Tokyo drifting. It was rippets and cigarettes, I'm assuming, was the big...
I totally forgot what we were talking about prior to going down this rabbit hole.
Well, so you were starting to tell us about...
This is kind of what our show is like.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
But you were telling us about working for H.R. McMaster and by the way of him, General Petraeus.
Traditional career paths and things like that. Yeah, so I think it's interesting, right? Because... Okay, so I think the Commandant and other service chiefs are trying to do the right thing, right? By clearly what we're doing now is not working out for retention. But I remain skeptical that particularly for the cyber domain, that one, we're going to be able to recruit the top cyber talent to serve in the Marine Corps, right? And I think he said that, well, we're not talking about someone who's going to go to boot camp and get an EGA. But still, my point is that I think, and maybe this is unfair, the kid who wants to, you know, get an EGA tattoo and like do a bunch of pull-ups is not going to be like a world-class coder.
Right.
It could be, but
probably
highly
not.
Unlikely, right?
Yeah.
Or if you're going to take that 18-year-old kid who wants to get a high insight and do pull-ups, train him or her to be a world-class coder, you're going to make him or her so valuable to the private sector that you're going to lose them, right? So you can't really compete on pay. So we're going to need a totally different model, particularly in the cyber domain. I'm not saying I've figured it out, but... I think autonomy is a big part of that. I don't think people are looking for like a more advanced, a quicker path to promotion or even greater pay. But I think allowing them to kind of do their own thing within the existing military structure or just allowing the private sector either through a reserve capacity or some other capacity to serve periodically with the military is probably what we're going to have to do. But we're going to have to change things up dramatically.
I mean, you hear that all the time with different jobs throughout the military where people love the job that they do.
Right.
Like it's kind of like... The old adage, I don't know if you're a cursor or not, but whenever you say eat the apple, fuck the core, like where you are...
What was that F word you used? I never heard that before in my,
well, you
my
know,
virgin ears. Oh, no.
You have the side of the house that says that if we are going to continue to do the job, I just don't want to deal with my gunny anymore.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm just tired of going into gunny's office and hearing it. Why can't we do with the cyber effect like you do with surgeons, for example, like whenever a surgeon will get a quarterly bonus instead of getting a additional pay. If you perform really well, you get a bonus, like a monetary bonus quarterly. It doesn't even have to be contact.
Yeah. You could do it that way. I think the bigger problem though, so let's say we figure out a way to make the military promotion and retention system and review and revise DOTMA in a way that makes sense and modernize it. Let's say we get that right. We have this bigger issue, which I'd be interested if you guys have talked about on your show, which seems to be getting worse in many cases, where companies like Google, who have the best talent in the world, right? Mm-hmm. Who can right now have better talent than China, or are convincing the best and brightest from China to go work for them and stay in this country. There seems to be a cultural movement afoot whereby they don't want to work with the Pentagon because the Pentagon does things like drone terrorists in places like Afghanistan. And if the woke consensus in Silicon Valley is such that the best and the brightest are unwilling to work with the military, and they put pressure on their leadership to revoke contracts with the military, well, then we're screwed, right? Because we can't do what the Chinese do, right? We can't force our most talented kids to go study at a cyber university nested at our best universities and then work for the PLA for 10 years. We don't want to go down that route, right? Like, we don't win if we try and out-China China. We sort of need to appeal to the patriotic instincts of our companies and retain that entrepreneurial culture and that sort of willingness to take risks that has made America the most successful economic engine in human history.
Do you think you can kind of find a middle ground, like for instance with what your colleague across the aisle and Seth Moulton is saying, where you have millions that can come into the government section and serve for 2 years, where you could have that cyber influence where you're not in the military but you're still serving your government?
So it's possible. I don't know exactly what Seth has proposed. I know he's been a big proponent of sort of mandatory national service. I'm very skeptical of such proposals just because I think—
Why is that?
I think they'll exacerbate the readiness crisis that we already have in the military, right? So in other words, if you create sort of another massive pool of people that you have to take care of, that's going to cost a lot of money.
But you have happy recruiters.
That's true. Yeah, that's right. Although, sidebar. So I probably don't have room for it, but I desperately want a Marine Corps pull-up bar in this office somewhere. And I have a broader ambition to have Marine Corps pull-up bars in front of every gate in every airport in America.
Sure.
To solve the health crisis in this country and also make air travel more tolerable. But I'm trying to work with the Marine Corps liaison to get a pull-up bar in this office. And it won't shock you to learn that the pull-up bar systems that Marine Corps recruiters use cost upwards of $900, which is insane. And it's taking like months, and will probably take a year to actually get one of those in my office.
$900 and then $2 for the cheapest tape in the world.
Yeah, that's right. So I went to a high school in my district that has a great manufacturing program, and I just sent them a picture. I'm like, can you guys just build this?
Do this
for me. I'll pay you for it. So
yeah, but that would be against the rules if you were in the Marine Corps. You wouldn't be able to find it cheaper.
Totally, right? Yeah.
If you were the company commander and you got caught finding a cheaper pull-up bar, they'd be like, what are you doing? We have a government contract. You'd be in trouble.
If ever there was an area where commercial off-the-shelf technology could sort of work, it's in pull-up bar technology, which isn't that advanced to begin with. So what were we talking about that? Recruitment and mandatory service.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
So I do think like the all-volunteer force has largely been a remarkable achievement, right? I think it's why we have a more professional military relative to China and Russia, but it comes with a certain cost, right? One, I think it disconnects the rest of society from military service, and therefore, I think in many ways masks the cost of ongoing conflict and war around the world. And then two, we have to pay more for every person, right? I think if you do, this is why when people say, oh, we're spending, you know, more than the next on our military than the next 10 countries combined, it's true, but it's also irrelevant in many cases because you're not making an apples to apples comparison between the American military and the Chinese military because personnel costs are dramatically different. Now, at some point, we're going to have to confront rising personnel costs in our military. But my fear is with a mandatory service requirement, you would dilute the benefits of the all-volunteer force, if that makes sense.
And I mean, what do you think about, though, when we're talking about retention and the war fatigue and that's effect on the retention as it is right now? And then on the horizon, you're looking at you know, potential other conflicts that could be coming around the corner, depending on what we decide to do as a military.
Sure. So I think it's a problem, but right now, I mean, so when I hit the fleet, I mean, people were deploying constantly, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just, you were lucky to get a one-for-one mm-hmm. deployment to dwell ratio. And mm-hmm. I can salute, there's a lot of leaders in the military right now that have made fixing that ratio a huge priority. But it's unclear to me if that's the case now, talking to my buddies that are still
I think it's calmed down.
Unless
you're a special operator, I don't feel like that's the case anymore.
If you're a SEAL, you're probably deploying all the time. But you like that because you get to write books about it.
True. And come on our show.
That's right. Speaking of that, I feel like one of the big topics that I've seen you talking about is Iran. Obviously, it's like the big thing right now. Iran is so hot right now.
Yeah. That's a good segue.
Thank you. I'm known for my horrendous segues. That's kind of my thing.
Speaking of pull-up bars, so Iran. Not a lot of pull-up bars.
You ran in that thing. That reminds me of a country we've been talking about, Iran. But you said that the threat from Iran to U.S. forces and our allies is credible and multifaceted, and the Trump administration is responding to Iran's provocations. And I think the one thing I've been looking to is the U.S. government is saying, yes, we've checked in. There's several things we're hitting here that are credible. But I think especially after Iraq and everything, I want to know, I've been waiting. I'm like, what exactly is it? What is the proof? And what are we looking at here?
Yeah.
And then just dumping another one on top of that. Where do you see this going in the next few years?
Sure. Sure. So I'm going to be careful here because I don't want to get into the classified realm. It's classic intel office. Yeah.
But it would be really good for our downloads.
It's actually okay. I'm pretty
you
sure all of our TSs are still good.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
Go for it.
Yeah. Mine's not.
No one's going to hear this. No one's going to hear this anyway. Yeah. Go ahead. You're good.
TSSCI podcast. That's a market no one has cornered.
We're trying. Cat card in the thing.
I snuck in on Rob O'Neill. I snuck in. You were part of SEAL Team 6, and he didn't catch it at first. I'm like, you're supposed to correct me.
Yeah. By the way, have you guys seen the Funnier Die thing with the killed Bin Laden, where the guy's like, he's a Marine, actually, Rob Riggle is a comedian.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Getting pinned. He's like, you can tell no one that you actually killed Bin Laden. They immediately flash cuts to, I killed Bin Laden. He's in the bar. Speaking of SEALs writing novels. So I would say this. Obviously, Iran has a well-documented and demonstrated history of one targeting U.S. service members while we were actively engaged in Iraq. It's my view that they still represent the greatest threat to our troops that are in Iraq partnered with the ISF right now. And we have to confront the unfortunate geopolitical fact that Iran's influence has steadily grown since our involvement in the region in 2003. And I think that's a huge failure of both intelligence forecasts and regional analysts, failure to anticipate the way in which we are upending the balance of power in the region. I think the Obama administration's policy, which was one of rapprochement with Iran and believing that the nuclear agreement would moderate their behavior, was an abysmal failure. And Iran's behavior has only grown more aggressive. And the carnage we've seen in Syria, in Yemen, in key parts of Lebanon, now threatening Israel, are directly related to that, right? Mm-hmm. So I think there's enough evidence there to suggest Iran has a influence of malign behavior. I think we've had recent open source reporting telling us that Iranian proxies may be linked to, for example, limpet mines being put on commercial vessels in the Middle East. Certainly shouldn't surprise us that there's a relationship between the Houthi rebels and the Iran. There's been open source reporting about the relationship between various groups, Hezbollah foremost among them, but Palestinian Islamic Jihad, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a long way of me saying that as Iran continues to feel the economic pressure of us getting out of the nuclear deal, ending the waivers on various sanctions, imposing some additional sanctions, that they would lash out. Right? Mm-hmm. Lash out in an attempt perhaps to distract from the very real economic pain their citizens are feeling. And by extension, lash out in an effort to distract from the fact that there's been persistent protests in the streets of Tehran for the last 2 years. And you have Iranian citizens going into the streets saying, you know, death to the Ayatollah and stop spending money on financing terrorists around the world. So to me, it just makes sense that Iran would be lashing out at a time we are imposing maximum pressure on it. And I think, and I'm sorry to go on here,
no,
there was a narrative that seemed to take hold last week in particular that John Bolton and Trump were trying to gin up a fake war with Iran in some sort of weird wag the dog strategy. And I just saw absolutely no evidence of that. I think the evidence favors the idea that the Iranian regime is provoking, and we expedited a carrier strike group deployment to the region in response to a threat we felt was real to forces in the region.
So, but all of that, I'm not disagreeing with everything you just said, but on the heels of being in some conflict since 2001, what do you say to our military on the precipice of what could be another war in that region?
Not just the military, the like 91% of civilians don't want any type of conflict around either.
I would say two things. One, before any massive military operation took place, in my opinion, as a member of Article 1, it would have to get
little constitution,
constitution,
little guy.
All the kids are saying that.
It's a buzzword. It's a buzzword around these parts.
I guess.
But can you, as a cyber guy, can you just go in there and like unplug all their shit and shut them down?
I personally have an app on my phone that shuts down Qasem Soleimani's access to the internet. No, okay. So two things quickly. I would say one, I think they would need congressional authorization prior to embarking on a large scale military operation, particularly the scale, a scale similar to what we saw in Iraq.
Right.
Two, this is sort of the paradox of deterrence, right? In order to avoid war, you have to convince the other guy that you are willing to go to war, that you are willing to punish them should they take more provocative actions. And so I think the president would have the authority to respond if the Iranians attacked, for example, our ships that were that are in the region. But for a protracted military operation, particularly some sort of regime change effort in Iran, which I don't think is on the table at all, and I don't think Trump himself wants to get committed in another ground war in the Middle East, it would certainly require congressional approval. But again, deterrence is all about the avoidance of war, and it requires you to stare the other guy in the face and also show a credible threat, right? And that's the idea behind repositioning bombers and ships.
Do you think the political climate now would even allow for congressional approval of war? Like, if we went to I just don't see, with the divisiveness in political culture, if Trump wanted to do it, Congress is not going to do it. Like, there, you would never get a unanimous vote for it unless they attacked American soil.
Yeah, I think there would have to be an attack on. I mean, listen, if the Iranians like.
So I don't think you. What I'm saying in that is that you would never have congressional approval. He would have to use the executive powers.
Yeah, but that to me. So going back to going back to the Korean War, which Truman described as a police action and justified based on the UN Charter and UN Security Council resolutions, and then accelerating with the Gulf of Tonkin resolution in 1964, which was an overly generous grant of authority from Congress to the Johnson administration, leading up to Congress's attempt
Princeton
to reclaim.
Folks. It's PhD.
Right, so in simpler terms, Congress in the modern era has abdicated its war powers, right? Its power to declare war, its power to conduct oversight of war. The War Powers Resolution in 1973, which was intended, passed over Nixon's veto, intended to reclaim that authority, in my opinion, has done the exact opposite. Most presidents have maintained, all presidents since have maintained that it's unconstitutional, and they usually ignore it. And then in 2001, after 9/11, we passed the 9/11 AUMF, I think a 60-word authorization that still is what we're using to go around the world and kill a bunch of people. Congress has really surrendered its dominant position constitutionally when it comes to war powers. And so there's always the risk that the executive would do that. Indeed, many of the arguments that Trump and his administration are making when it comes to their involvement in Syria are precisely the same arguments that Obama and his administration made. And it's a combination of the 9/11 AUMF and the, quote, inherent Article 2 authorities, which I think is a joke, right? So Congress needs to be in the business of demanding a greater seat at the table. But I think politically, to your original question, it would be difficult, if not impossible, for Trump to sustain support for another war in a country in the Middle East that is in some ways more complicated than Iraq.
Well, I think that's where my, and I don't know anything. I've been going on.
That's a great statement.
Let's make that a drop. I've been trying to understand
it. Zero blog 30. We don't know.
Yeah, I don't know shit, but I've been trying to follow it and trying to understand it and trying to look at both sides. And I think my fear looking at it is, well, maybe we won't go directly to war with them, but proxy war here, proxy war there. Yeah. And next thing you know, you're in another Afghanistan, you're in another whatever. Like, I just, I don't know where this is going, and if it's not wag the dog, then why these aggressive tweets and like the posturing and all this stuff? Like, I just feel like I'm not tracking on that, and I feel like it's so misleading to the American people who are scared and who are tired of war.
Especially when you're using words like imminent.
Right, like imminent attacks threat. On. So I just, that's the part that I don't understand.
Totally take your point. And I think we need to confront a bigger unfortunate reality, which is that we are engaged in a proxy war right now, right?
Right.
I mean, we have how many special operators?
We have several.
Right. In Syria.
How many people in these buildings, like these two buildings, could name where boots on the ground are? Like all the places.
Oh, yeah. Well, this was interesting. Like in the last Congress, when there was this sudden outrage about special operator presence in Africa, and most members of Congress are like, what?
Wait, what? We have people there?
Like, you voted consistently for funding for stuff like this because most people aren't paying attention. So listen, I think we are involved in some sort of proxy war right now. I actually think, we've arrived at more of a sustainable model in the Middle East, what I would call a moneyball model. I mean, working by, with, and through local forces strikes me as the only way you can maintain some semblance of stability without a greater American involvement. Now, that means you have to be comfortable accepting risks. That means you need to be comfortable working with allies that don't often share your values, that do things in a much more messy fashion than we'd like. But we also eventually need to get Congress to pay attention and Congress to authorize all these activities. Otherwise, we're going to see what we've seen consistently since the 70s, which is that the presidency and the executive branch grow bigger, 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 and more powerful and more complex. And Article 1, to throw that hot term around again, grows more and more powerless. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the original Constitution, the framers actually were worried that the legislative branch would dominate, would necessarily predominate, was the phrase that they used. They never would have anticipated that we would have given up all our power. And I think that's at the source of most problems we face in Congress in the present day.
That so you just got to maintain those checks and balances.
That being said, should we take the entire U.S. government, unplug it, and plug it back in?
By the way, these beeps are not because we're talking ill of certain policies. It's because we're getting ready for a vote. So I now have 15 minutes to get to the House floor.
So can we do fire?
The remainder of our podcast, very difficult.
Let's do rapid fire word association. First thing that pops into your mind when I give you military. Glow belt.
Wait.
Glow belt.
Awesome.
What an officer.
What an officer. What an officer.
All right, whoopee.
I haven't heard that term.
I feel like the pressure's on. The thing is buzzing.
He knows that
he's the fastest congressman. Yeah. So we're like, you can make it.
Why do you think I won that race? I was wearing my globe out.
Exactly.
Oh, man. I don't know.
That's next.
All right, so hard pass.
Describe what a boot is.
A boot is someone who takes more words than necessary telling you how hardcore they are.
Yeah. Okay.
The best MRE.
The best MRE is anyone that has M&Ms.
Ooh, that's a good answer.
I think you mean pan-coated chocolate discs, sir.
I think that is what you mean, yeah. All right, next one, silver bullet.
No such thing in life. Or warfare.
Okay. Yeah. See, that's somebody who didn't go to recruit training. All right, West Point.
I silver bullet involves when you you've it's a little too hot outside.
Yes.
There we go.
Getting a strong, strong remedy.
We had to put the congressman aside and bring the Marine back. Yeah.
I've honestly forgot. I've been like deprogrammed all these terms.
All right, big time memory, PhD, and all that, and a Princeton guy. What's your 8th general order?
Oh my gosh.
We're just goofing. We don't know it either.
We don't know those either. Don't worry about it.
I don't know.
All right.
I'm sorry, Chesty Puller, wherever you are.
On my bicep, I have his portrait tattooed on the inside of my bicep.
That's right. We should have done a whole segment on dumb tattoos that Marines have gotten. All my
buddies. We don't have enough time.
Right out of TBS, we're getting the worst tattoos, including my buddy Ryan Light. I'm going to call you out on this podcast. Got a tattoo on his rib cage that said, "The strength of the wolf is in the pack."
Oh my God.
Hadn't deployed anywhere yet. Hadn't done anything.
I have Ronald McDonald on my ribs. So that's a little better than
that. And I've never told a congressperson this, but I have a tramp stamp. It's a shamrock.
Oh my gosh.
All right, last one. Spell your name as fast as you can, phonetically, military style.
Last name or first name or both? Gamma, Alpha, Lima, Alpha, Gamma, Hotel, Echo, Romeo.
Nailed it. Got Go it. Get that vote.
Congressman, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate
thank
it.
You thank you guys. This is fun.
All right. Yeah,
what
thank
do we
you.
Talk about? I don't even
know. I don't know. It was a whirlwind. It was a whirlwind. Yet another Marine is under investigation for posting racist material on social media, the sixth known case in the Corps since just last year. A Twitter user at Penn State University posted images from Marine Second Lieutenant Philippe Mayer's Snapchat account, which shows Mayer making racist comments. The images, posted to his Snapchat story, were part of a series of photos and videos taken at a party where Mayer and other attendees marked Martin Luther King Day by eating fried chicken and watermelon. The images include a picture of a mock $0 bill with President Barack Obama's face on it with a caption, "My hard N. Obama coming in deep" Ooh. "With that welfare check," and a video of Mayer getting a watermelon crown placed on his head with the caption, "I'm king again." Hard N.
Jeez.
Hard N there. Additionally, Task and Purpose found that Mayer had posted a photo of himself on Facebook the year prior with the caption "Gucci Goy," a Hebrew term typically used to denote non-Jews. Goy is often jokingly used by white nationalists to refer to themselves.
Jeez.
Yeah, so, I mean, absolute garbage piece of shit guy. Get him the fuck out of the Marine Corps. You're fucking gross. There's no place for you. The 23-year-old is currently assigned to the basic school in Quantico, Virginia, according to Training and Education Command. I cannot imagine a world where they let this guy... It would be a complete failure if they let him continue and get through with this kind of thinking, because there's no... You can't. You
no.
cannot lead troops.
With the diversity there is present
yeah.
in the military, you cannot have these thoughts. Even a little bit. Even if he wasn't a moron, because that's another reason that I wouldn't want him in the military, because he's obviously a moron, because
right.
who would actually put these things out there?
And he
to
looks
be found?
Like a douche, by the way. There's a picture of him, and he's like riding a horse.
Yeah, I saw that picture.
His
pretty bad.
His t-shirt's real tight, and he looks like an absolute asshat. Yeah. Most importantly, racism aside,
most importantly,
he looks like a douche.
In pictures.
Yes, not photogenic. Gross.
No, but it's on the one hand, again, I don't know how you could be this stupid this day and age to put things on social media and think they won't be found, and
right.
you're then, you know, persecuted for them, rightfully so. But on the other hand, I'm glad he did, so we knew he was a douchebag and he's not in our military now.
That's true. Better to have it out in the sun.
Yeah.
Sometimes sunshine's the best disinfectant, as they say.
Wow, I've never heard that.
Yes, and the investigation is under review by the chain of command right now. And Marines are not allowed to be part of extremist groups, and the Corps has multi-layered screening effort to stop people with deviant thinking and behavior from enlisting and commissioning. So again, don't want to stay on it for too long, but get this guy the fuck out of my Corps.
Human. Get him
get
out,
him out of my
get him
Marine
out of society. Corps.
Yeah, he's done. He's gross. I don't know. I don't know what else to say about it, but
there's nothing else to be said.
No space for it.
Right.
And that's it. Now, let's go on to save rounds. Let's talk about somebody a little braver,
a little
better.
So Chaps sent us a picture. He was touring one of the U.S. Army museums out there in Oahu, and he took a picture of a gentleman's uniform, and the uniform was for General Eric Shinseki. Had you ever heard the name before he sent that picture?
I had, because mm-hmm. he's kind of a player in D.C.
Right, yes. So Shinseki is our badass of the week, and we wanted to highlight him because he is a two-time Vietnam combat veteran, in which he was awarded 3 Bronze Star medals for valor and 2 Purple Hearts. During one of his Vietnam deployments, serving as a forward artillery observer, Red Leg, he stepped on a landmine which blew off the front of one of his feet. After almost a year recovering and returned to active duty, he was the first Asian American 4-star general and the first Asian American Secretary of Veterans Affairs.
Holy shit.
Yes,
wow.
Very impressive gentleman.
That's awesome. Paving the way, leading the way. And I have to ask, your artillery, was Red Legs what you called forward observers for artillery?
Red Legs, just a term of what we call just artillerymen in general, artillerymen and women.
So if you get assigned artillery, that could be your job instead of like pulling the cord and like...
Oh, yeah, I did that. I did that
you
as
did.
One of my jobs.
Yeah.
I was a forward observer.
Like Secret Squirrel, you sneak ahead and you try and get the best coordinates for where...
Yeah, you determine where do we want to land the ammunition, where do we want to land the rounds.
Do they pick those people? I'm just really interested in that. Do they pick those people like this guy can hike really far. This person's sneaky.
Well, now the way it works now is a lot of times a lieutenant will do all of those basic jobs. So, you know, FSO, fire direction officer, fire support officer, forward observer, you'll do all those jobs if you're lucky as a lieutenant just to become a well-rounded artillery officer.
Okay.
So it's not like, hey, I think I'm going to become a forward observer and that's all I'm going to ever do. It's one of those things like when we go to our basic officer basic course, we learn all of those skills.
Right.
So it's something that you just need to know as an artillery guy.
There's more to it than I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And also, so he was a forward observer doing that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
To step on a landmine and blow one of your feet pretty much off.
I didn't know that about him.
And then come back a year later.
Right.
I was always so amazed on my first deployment. There was guys who would get shot,
mm-hmm.
and then they'd be back like a week and a half later.
Right.
Like, you know, superficial, like through the top of the skin kind of thing. But that still has to like, hey, what? Holy shit, I got shot. Like,
yeah, because I mean, it's life's a game of inches. One inch one way or another, and maybe you're not there. So to psychologically, to go back out there, it takes a lot.
Yeah. That just really shows the kind of person that he is, and that's just crazy. So kudos to him. That's a cool badass of the week, and that's really neat. So Chaps is just out and about roaming, and he saw that?
He was at one of the museums, it looked like, and he sent us a picture of his dress uniform, or his Class A uniform, rather.
Okay.
And it's obviously stacked with all sorts of ribbons for an accomplished career in the Army.
Yeah, I would imagine that is a general with quite the stack. Mm-hmm. Kind of a big deal.
Speaking of artillery, I want to ask your opinion on something.
All right. Splash out, buddy.
So, very good.
Thank you.
So, in the artillery, there is a science to learning how to launch these rounds and shoot them very far distances.
Yeah.
Shoot these rockets. So, is it okay to say that artillerymen are rocket scientists?
I'm going to say yes.
Thank you very much.
I think you are a rocket scientist. For sure a rocket scientist. I always knew you were sharp, and I had a feeling.
So that's pretty cool.
All right.
I've always considered myself a rocket scientist.
I'll be honest, I have too. People can't see me rolling my eyes, but I'm not at all. All right, rocket scientist, do you have any saved rounds alibis?
Yes, I have a few. We're going to keep this pretty light. Number one. I think there's no way in hell, aside from the fact that we're amazing, I don't think that on the 75th anniversary of D-Day in France that our U.S. women have any shot of losing the World Cup.
You think we're going to win it all?
Oh, yeah.
This is one of my favorite times, USA.
Right.
The women's soccer team just crushes. What, they just won 13-0
against Thailand
the other day against Thailand. But so usually that's around the time the Women's World Cup is when I'm down the Jersey Shore.
Oh yeah.
And you go to the outdoor bars and everybody's waving the American flags and watching the games and rooting these women on. And I especially feel like women's sports get the shaft so hard. And it's awesome to see men, women, everybody rooting these ladies on because they are so incredibly talented. So yeah, definitely best of luck. I'm sure they listen to ZBT.
They probably do if they're worth their salt. No, but it really is fun to be at a bar with a lot of people during the daytime watching these games.
Yeah.
It's just such a
blast. You could even cut off the watching these games part. It's just fun for me in general to be at a bar in the daytime is also great.
Number two, our good pal, Johnny Serdik.
Lieutenant Johnny Serdik.
Making his debut in the PLL this weekend for
the Premier Lacrosse League. Yes. So we got a couple of veterans in that lacrosse league now hitting it up.
That's very exciting. And then I guess finally I'll say this, and I would say this even if he were here.
All right.
Chaps, he's been posting his outfits. He's having a great time.
Ramen noodle bathing suit.
So I saw that outfit with the ramen noodle bathing suit, the sun shirt, the hat, the weird shoes. Chaps, do you? I think that's awesome. But they reminded me of the movie Big Daddy when Adam Sandler decides, like, all right, you know what? You can do whatever you want. He's going to let him dress however he wants. And the kid comes out and he's like, that's what you want to wear?
Yeah, flippers.
All right.
Chaps might have flippers
luck.
On, by
Good
the way.
Good luck walking down the street, but have fun. That's what I think when Chaps gets dressed in the morning. That's what you want to wear, buddy? All right.
Go to town. That's his style. He's sticking to it. I hope he's having the best time.
Yes.
He will be back on the next episode you hear. But again, happy Friday, everybody. Thank you so much to everybody who listens to this show. We love you.
We sure do.
That's it. Bye.
Who says bye?
Sound the retreat.
Sound the retreat. Shit. God damn it, Chaps, if you're
almost,
listening.
Almost a perfect show.
I got real soft at the end, and I, yeah. All right, sound the retreat.